For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. British Prime Minister Theresa May has triggered Article 50 of the Lisbon Treaty, formally giving notice of the UK's intention to leave the European Union. The Prime Minister gave a statement at Parliament at the same time as Britain's permanent representative in Brussels handed the letter to European Council President Donald Tusk. From London, Kevin Ozebeck reports.
The UK formally gave notice of its intentions to leave the EU 9 months after the country voted to leave the bloc by a small margin. By triggering Article 50, Prime Minister Theresa May starts the clock on the two-year deadline to settle the so-called divorce agreements tackling many complex issues.
This is an historic moment from which there can be no turning back.
Most notably is the question of the status of millions of EU nationals living in the UK and UK nationals in the EU, as well as the UK settlement bill for outstanding liabilities, which many EU officials suggest could be as high as 80 billion euros. In these next 2 years, the UK and EU are in for a tough battle as complicated negotiations on divorce settlements begin.
European Council President Donald Tusk has said the UK's departure from the EU will not weaken the bloc. Mr. Tusk said the group would be sorry to see the UK go, but would work to secure a deal on the future relationship between the two.
Brexit has made us, the community of 27, more determined and more united than before. I am fully confident of this, especially after the Rome Declaration, and today I can say that we will remain determined and united also in the future, also during the difficult negotiations ahead.
U.S. President Donald Trump's plan to reverse climate change policies is facing legal opposition from state governors. New York and California and a range of environmental groups say they intend to fight the president. Nick Harper reports from New York.
In a joint statement, the governors of New York and California called President Trump's position on climate change profoundly misguided and shockingly ignores basic science. It comes after he signed an order to roll back policies instituted by his predecessor, President Obama, that limited fossil fuel production. President Trump, however, argues those laws are job-killing regulations. He aims to boost the workforce in the gas, coal, and oil industries. Environmental activists are also eyeing legal bids against President Trump and have hired lawyers to initiate challenges.
For more on the day's top stories, you can follow us on Twitter at Feature Story or check out our videos online on Facebook. That's facebook.com/FeatureStoryNews. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks, Rebecca Foster. It's such ludicrous theatre, this Brexit, this Article 50 triggering. It is exactly what we were talking about on the programme last week. Rolling 24-hour live soap opera garbage. Kay Burley in Clacton-on-Sea, Adam Bolton at Westminster, 2 years. What a crock that is. It could be sorted out in a week or two. You're not going to impose any tariffs on us because you sell more to us than we do to you. We're taking back control of our borders and we're taking back the rights to legislate for ourselves. All the rest of it is nonsense. I'm not going to spend too much time on it this particular Wednesday, March 29th, because you're probably sick to death of it. But there's a lot happening and it's going to be very interesting in the coming weeks, particularly before the summer recess. A lot's going to happen. Might tell you more about that later on, but we'll certainly be talking about it ongoing. It is the Richie Allen Show, of course, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and Alternate Current Radio. You are very welcome to it.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live. Live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Now, this hour, the singer-songwriter and journalist Alison Chablow will join me. Now, Alison is being sued by the charity Campaign Against Anti-Semitism over a song that she uploaded to YouTube, the video of a song she uploaded last year. Now, this is very unusual. It's a private prosecution. The Crown Prosecution Service at that stage last year decided not to prosecute Alison. She was due in court last Friday. It was adjourned. Very serious, this. Alison joins me this hour to talk about that. And finally, Dana Durnford is on the programme. I'm like the boy who cried Dana Durnford. He is on the programme today. Decades of experience as a commercial fisherman and deep sea diver. He believes the pollution of the Pacific Ocean caused by the Fukushima disaster, that radiation of the Pacific is causing anomalous weather events all over the world. Again, serious stuff this Wednesday. Welcome to the programme. Broadcasting again, Fab 2, ACR, Alternate Current Radio, davidicke.com. David is in Zagreb in Croatia ahead of his all-day speaking event there this Saturday. Wonderful. And he's received a terrific welcome there so far. To find out more about the Worldwide Wake Up Tour, simply go to theworldwidewakeup.com. Couldn't be any simpler. Right, now, nothing about Brexit. Nothing. Nothing. For the moment. I'm going to leave it. I'm going to leave it today. I know. It's very unusual with all that's going on. There's nothing to add. Apart from the behaviour of the 24-hour cable news channels, it's appalling. It's nonsense. The carry-on is absolutely crazy. Obviously, we'll talk more about what's going on and what should be going on in future programmes, maybe even tomorrow. But for now, you know, dear listener, there is a big story today that's going under the radar because of all this Brexit talk and Article 50. What is it? Well, last week, Khalid Masood allegedly drove a car onto Westminster Bridge and murdered three people and then went on to murder a policeman. If I've gotten the numbers wrong, I apologise. It might be four people and the policeman. I think it's three civilians and one policeman. Khalid Masood. We heard a lot about him, didn't we? After his name was finally released to the press, we heard that he'd been radicalised and we heard that WhatsApp was to blame and we heard a lot. What we didn't hear was from anybody connected to him. A statement was released by his mother and his widow, brief, apologetic, expressing shame and horror and wishing the survivors who are injured all the very best. All very predictable. But this morning, the BBC, in the BBC Radio 5 Live breakfast programme, they ran an interview with a man called Farisat. Now, Farisat was Khalid Masood's boss at a teaching English, at an English school, TEFL, teaching English as a foreign language. I know all about it. I did the course myself 15, 16 years ago. So Farisat spoke with the BBC. This is BBC Radio 5 Live's report on that. Listen carefully to what the man says. And I mean listen carefully. This has gone unnoticed today, apart from a couple of local newspapers, Birmingham and elsewhere. But largely the media has ignored this. This is the boss of the alleged psychotic jihadist terrorist Khalid Masood. Listen to his boss.
Initially, I thought it must be a different Khalid Masood. I thought there's no way the Khalid Masood I knew would do such a terrible crime. It took me about a day to it dawned on me that it was actually him who did the crime. I was bewildered, shocked, angry, in disbelief, really. He wasn't the man I knew.
I mean, who was the man that you knew?
As a teacher, a very professional man, he was an excellent teacher. He got on very well with his non-Muslim colleagues. A very friendly, stable kind of guy, really.
And in terms of his faith, I mean, what faith did he have at the time, and what was he doing?
He was a practicing Muslim. I wouldn't say deeply religious, but he was committed to his faith.
What did he talk to you about?
He told me about his transition to Islam. In prison, he made a firm resolve not to go back to the life of crime. And when he left prison, part of his rehabilitation, the path he chose was to go to Saudi Arabia. I think partly to get out of the environment that he was already in. He spent a couple of years there, and then he came to Luton after that. When he came to us, and when I spoke to him, he was not interested in the sort of the politicized version of Islam. He had no contact with any of the extremist groups. He was more a practicing Muslim who committed to his faith, committed to his family, and was focused on his career. Remember, we talked about a middle-aged, middle-class man who was very focused on his family.
I mean, do you think he did come into contact with extremist groups, and where do you think that might have happened?
He may have come into contact because in the Bay Park of Luton, they have a stall. He did ask me once, who is this group called Al-Muhajirun? And I explained they're an extremist group. They distort the teachings of Islam. But he asked me, the way he asked me, he was quite dismissive of them just by his very question. I don't think he was influenced by extremist groups at all. If he was, he would have spoke to me or asked me questions about issues pertaining to that particular strain of thought.
And did he, Matt, shed any light at all on what may have been a motive for this attack?
Well, Farisat says many journalists have been asking which mosque Massoud attended, but he says that's irrelevant because none of the mosques in Luton are radicalised or were at the time Massoud was living there. He told us that if Massoud was sympathetic to violent extremism, he would have seen the signs, and he's keen to emphasise that this man had not been radicalised during his time in Luton.
Thank you very much.
Listen to the segue into the next item. Listen to this.
Going to speak to Nick Clegg now. Good morning.
Morning.
Prime Minister will invoke Article
50. Yeah, we got to speak to Nick Clegg now. Good morning. Let's just ignore what we just heard there over the last 2 minutes. That the man charged with, not charged with, the man we were told caused chaos, caused carnage, death and destruction on Westminster Bridge last week. Well, it makes no sense whatsoever. Let's move swiftly on there. How did this report get through? The man wasn't radicalised. He had no interest in radical jihadism. He wasn't radicalised in prison when he was there for assault with a deadly weapon. He came out, he was a good guy, had no problems with non-Muslims, was lovely, was liked by a lot of people, was friendly, was open and honest. Not a trace of anger, not a sign that the man was in any way interested in Islamic State, violent jihadism, or... You see? So all you can say to that is, number of people have been on this programme for the last two and a half years, and they've talked at length about the grooming of patsies for attacks like we saw on Westminster Bridge last Wednesday. Am I saying that's what happened? No, I'm not. How do I know? But how many more of these events are we going to have when people come out and say, people who knew the man, saying, no, it doesn't make... I know the guy, it doesn't make any sense. The guy had no interest in the ideologies of violent murderers. None whatsoever. He had a good job. He had a good life. He wanted to atone for his earlier mistakes. He was a good guy. Nothing adds up. Now, it's been suggested by others who knew him that at some stage over the last couple of months, he had some sort of a mental breakdown. Connect the dots. And these are the questions, you see, not being asked by your BBC, your Channel 4 or your ITN. Why then, if he had no connection to any of these groups whatsoever... None. And he was nice and he was liked and he had a good job and he was getting on well. Why one day did he up and go, do you know what? I'm going to get a car and I'm going to go kill some people. And I'm going to take a knife and I'm going to stab a policeman. Out of the blue. Like that. Almost like he was switched on. If you know what I'm saying. Now I've no proof of that. And it's piss poor journalism to be saying this is what happened. I'm not saying that. But when news outlets play interviews like that with guys like the former boss of Khalid, Farisat, they should be saying, well, that's pretty strange, isn't it? Let's follow that up. but they don't. It's 14 minutes past the hour. Very quick break. When we come back, my first guest will be on the line. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 and Alternate Current Radio.
Looking to arrange a mortgage? Confused by all the deals available? Let Manchester Mortgages do the work for you. Take advantage of our free mortgage review offer throughout February and March and see if we can save you money. We are whole of market brokers with access to hundreds of mortgage schemes across the UK. Call us on 0161 706 0242 or go to manchestermortgages.co.uk. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Manchester Mortgages are a trading style of mortgages for you, North West Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Do not invest another pound of your money until you've heard this message. Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my new best-selling book. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk for full details. Inside, I reveal why gold could soar to $10,000 an ounce and how to make sure you own enough of the right type of gold. To get your copy dispatched today, go to newcaseforgold.co.uk now. This book will change everything you think you know about investing in gold. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk today.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they're doing.
Traffic 2, available now at premilonpictures.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
And welcome back to the programme. It's exactly 17 minutes past the hour. While we dial up our first guest, let me remind you that the television programme is going to return a week tomorrow, all going well. We're pretty certain that it will be back a week tomorrow. It will be live at 9 p.m. on Thursday evenings. That's 9 p.m. BST, British Summertime, UK time, all going well. I say that because you never know what might happen, but we're provisionally going to start it, and it's all looking good. We're ready to go, we think. That begins a week tomorrow. Right. Momentary issue with getting our next, our first guest even on the line. Let me just play some music from the Beatles. And while we do that, we'll get her on. Alison Shablow is our first guest. It's 18 minutes past the hour on your Richie Allen Show. It says, "Here comes the sun." Apart from today, it's been lovely recently. Let's hope we get Alison back in a minute.
Here comes the sun, do-do-do. Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right. Little darling, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter. Little darling, it feels like been here. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right. Little darling, the smile's returning to the faces. Little darling, it seems like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun. son, and I say, it's all right. Here comes the sun, here comes the sun, it's all right. It's all right.
The Beatles and Here Comes the Sun on the Richie Allen Show. The time is 21 minutes past the hour. But there's some strange goings on electronically. My call is going through to our first guest, Alison Shablo, but she's unable to answer it. The Skype, well, her Skype won't allow her to answer the call. Weird things going on this Wednesday, but we're going to persevere anyway. If the worst comes to the worst, we can always try the old phone. So we'll see how it goes anyway. Really, really interesting story this. Hugely interesting. You know, got all sorts of repercussions this for freedom of speech. It's the first prosecution in the UK of its kind. Private prosecution by a charity called Campaign Against Anti-Semitism against Alison over a YouTube video of one of her songs, a song called Survivors. At the time last year, the CPS Crown Prosecution Service decided not to pursue a case against Alison. But that's changed recently, and that's what I want to talk about amongst other things as well. So we're going to give it a minute and see can we get her on and work out the gremlins out of the systems. If we have to use the phone, we'll use the phone, I suppose. Number of you tweeting me in the meantime about the audio clip I played of the boss of Khalid Massoud, the man alleged to have committed the terror attack, even though, as one of our listeners tweeted a short time ago, quite rightly, there's no evidence. Andrew Christie tweeted me, Richie, ITV still using the term terror attack on tonight's news, despite the fact there was no connection to radical Islam. None. Absolutely right. None whatsoever. No evidence whatsoever connecting him or the attack to any group. Allegedly, Islamic State took responsibility for it pretty quickly last Wednesday. But there's no evidence connecting this guy to any of these groups at all. Fascinating one, that. We'll follow it, though, in the absence of the mainstream media's interest in finding out who this guy really was and why he can't be connected to Islamic State. We'll definitely follow it. Right, just for the moment, unusually, I'm going to have to take some more music while we try and figure out what's going on with Alison on Skype there. Failing getting her on Skype, we'll dial her up on the old phone. This is Oasis in the meantime. Seeing as we're in Manchester, 24 past the hour, on your Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 and Alternate Current Radio, and TuneIn Radio as well. This is Cigarettes and Alcohol. No interest in the former, a little bit of interest in the latter, eh?
Oh,
Oasis and Cigarettes and Alcohol on the Richie Allen Show. We're having one or two issues getting Alison Shablow on the line. She's there, but we're finding it difficult to get her on either over the old Skype. I remember a time when you couldn't say Skype. You weren't allowed to say Skype. Your listeners, you see, they weren't supposed to know about the ins and outs of making phone calls and stuff like that. There's been a couple of problems. We're going to try and get her on another landline. Now, we have numbers, of course, and mobile numbers, but it's one of the strange old things that the deeply conspiratorial amongst you, I know what you're like. I can smell what it is you're saying about this, but there's often a pretty logical explanation for these things. Carried a two. I think we have the right number now this time, second time. So, I know what you're thinking, but it might not be the nefarious activity by anybody connected with any old intelligence agency or anything like that. It might not be. But I think we might be connected now. Before we say along, let me just tell you a little bit about Alison. Alison Shablow spent much of the last 20 years in Switzerland teaching music in schools, working as a performer and as a journalist, among other things. Now, she first came to our attention, at least to the public's attention here in the UK, when she gave a quenelle salute in front of Edinburgh Castle during the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. That was back in 2015, as I said. Now, she did that, performed the quenelle after a pro-Israel group in the UK pressured the Fringe Society to ban her music show. Now, last summer, as I've mentioned already, the campaign against anti-Semitism, who we know a little bit about because the campaign against anti-Semitism tried unsuccessfully to have David Icke's appearance, his speaking engagement at the Apollo in Manchester in January, they were unsuccessful in attempting to have that cancelled. They wrote to the Apollo, they wrote to the City Council, made all manner of accusations and threats. Didn't matter. David went ahead and spoke anyway, and the rest is history. Now, the campaign against anti-Semitism took out a private criminal prosecution against Alison over a YouTube video of one of her songs. Now, the song is called Survivors. The CPS at that time, for our overseas listeners, that's the Crown Prosecution Service, they'd decided not to pursue a case against Alison, although Alison tells me that might have changed. So because of that, the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, which is a charity, took out the private criminal prosecution then. And I can tell you, at no small cost, these things are very expensive. Now, while this was going on, Alison had been receiving death threats from people she believes are closely connected to a number of different pro-Israeli groups. So back to the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism case against Alison. Now, a trial date was set for last Friday. That's last Friday, March 24th. And a gagging order had been imposed on Alison, preventing her from mentioning the names of her accusers or from posting anything wholly or partly racist or anti-Semitic or grossly offensive online. Now, March 7th, a couple of weeks back, before the trial, Alison's solicitor was notified that the Crown was now taking over the campaign against anti-Semitism's private prosecution. Now, 2 days before the trial, that's the 23rd, last Wednesday, a new judge granted the adjournment. In fact, the judge who'd imposed the gagging order on Alison last December, Chief Magistrate Arbuthnot, had quietly recused herself after it was discovered she'd been on an all-expenses-paid trip to Israel with the Conservative Friends of Israel. As it stands, the Crown is now trying to bring two further charges of malicious communications, again for the song Survivors, as well as for another song called Nemo's Anti-Semitic Universe. That's from another YouTube video of a performance Alison did in London last September. And Alison Shablow joins us on the line now. Alison, welcome.
Thank you, Richie.
And thanks for your patience there. I don't know what was going on with the old technology.
Yes, well, I've got, my computer had been seized, so I've got a very old computer. and it wouldn't allow me to take a Skype call. But yes, we managed to.
Well, good stuff. Well, so those listeners who think the CIA and MI5 and GCHQ and Mossad are behind all these things, they're not. There's generally good reasons and pretty easily explained.
Yes.
Right. Tell us about Survivors then. I've obviously listened to the song. I weighed up whether or not to play the song. I'm still weighing up whether or not to play the song.
No, I wouldn't if I were you.
But
not at
yeah,
the moment.
Yeah,
maybe later on.
Look, I'm an old pro, and I know that it might not be in our best interest to play it. But tell me about why did you write it? What's it about? It's a satirical song, by the way. I must say that to our listeners. It can be heard on YouTube under Alison Shablo. You will hear the song. What are you trying to say with the song?
Well, I'd written a series of revisionist songs. There are five of them all together. And they were partly inspired by a gentleman whose name is Gerard Menuhin. And he's the son of the famous Jewish violinist Yehudi Menuhin, of Jewish origin. And Gerard is a British-Swiss publisher and also a revisionist. He's his own tribe label him as and being anti-Semitic because he doesn't believe in the official narrative of the Holocaust. He sent me some lyrics, which were the basis of the title of my Edinburgh show that was banned last year, Tell Me More Lies. And then I wrote four more songs. And the last one that I wrote, this Survivors, I knew I wanted to write a song about Holocaust survivors. In particular, Irene Zisblatt, and I had this first line in my head. My name is Irene Zisblatt, and I come from Hungary. And once you get the first line of a song, once I get the first line of a song in my head, it's relatively easy to pull the rest out and compose a song. I chose also to write about Elie Wiesel, Nobel Prize winner, who claimed all sorts of nonsense in his books about the Holocaust. Elie Wiesel, he was at Auschwitz, that we know, with his father. When the camp was liberated by the Soviets, just before, we know that the guards at the camp, the SS, had given the prisoners the choice of either remaining to stay behind and meet their liberators or to leave with the SS, and that's what Wiesel and his father did. They left with the supposed persecutors. They didn't stay behind to see what the liberators had in store for them. He also claimed that in his book, Night, I think, which is a part of the curriculum in the United States, he claims that there's never any mention of gas chambers, and despite the fact that he and his father were both interned there, so he claims. He claims that the Jews were burned in open pits, and that's been debunked because Auschwitz is pretty much based on a swamp, and there's no mass graves. That's why there are all these crematory ovens in Auschwitz. It was impossible to make mass graves because, of course, that would have poisoned the water table. And so that's one of my characters. And another one is the Anne Frank Diary. As I explained to the policeman when I was arrested, these songs were a response, a musical response, to the harassment and targeting of my career, my family, my social life by these pro-Zionist, pro-Jewish organizations, pro-Israel organizations. I could have responded in the way that my accusers and my persecutors wanted, as in just shutting up, being silenced. I could have responded by abusing them in the same way that they abuse me, writing to lots of letters of complaints. But I thought, no, I'll do it musically. That's what I know best how to do. And well, yes, here we are.
Here we are. Now, they say, and, you know, our listeners will, of course, be following this. It's obviously a big story. It's been in the press quite a bit. They say, your accusers, your detractors, they say that what you do, whether you mean to do it or not, they say it causes harm. It causes great harm and distress to the relatives of people whom were persecuted by the Nazis in Nazi Germany. It's interesting, I know you haven't mentioned this, But in some newspaper articles where you've been mentioned, Norman Finkelstein's name has come up. But I always find that interesting because Norman had family members, interestingly enough, interned at Auschwitz. We might come back to Norman in a few minutes. I think we probably will. What do you say when they say to you, your songs are whether you again, just to repeat what I said, whether you know it or not, are causing unwarranted distress to people whose uncles, aunts or grandparents were murdered by the Nazis? What do you say to that?
I can't really see how my songs are in any way inciting any kind of distress to survivors. If it's the case, then I'm very sorry. If every time anybody had upset me, I got my friends in the press to write these articles. It's so subjective. I've had quite a lot of support from several prominent Jews, ex-Jews, Gilad Atzmon, Gerard, of course, Gerard Menuhin, and another gentleman who's French Jewish origin, who finds my songs witty and humorous and clever. So, if
yeah.
If people find my songs upsetting them, then no one's being obliged to listen. My songs are not being blasted through their windows with loudspeakers.
No, you're not following people around and screaming at them. And of course, that's very interesting. No. And again, we'll come back to that. Right. So, what do you believe then? What do you hold for yourself as the truth, Alison? Do you accept that? For me, a lot of people were persecuted in Nazi Germany. Jews were definitely persecuted. There's no doubt about that. And I hate constantly repeating my honest take on this particular subject, but I do because we always have new listeners listening to this. I believe that what happened to Jews was exploited by Zionists in the very, very, very short term after the Second World War for reasons of, setting up and creating the State of Israel and other reasons. I really do believe that. But I also believe that Jews were persecuted, Jews were murdered. I mean, I went to Dachau, south of Munich, and I visited that, and I met with very senior German people and, talked a lot to them about what they knew about what was going on. So what do you believe then? Do you accept that there was persecution and murder? Are you just challenging the forensic side of it? What is it exactly?
Yeah, so it's a good question, Richie. I think there are no revisionists, no Holocaust revisionists who deny that that the deportations, there were executions. The Jews suffered terribly. They were sent to work for the German war effort. Yes, it's the lack of forensics. And I was saying to a friend last night, we can't prove the existence of a supernatural God, but at the same time we can't scientifically disprove it either. Whereas I think that the official narrative regarding gas chambers, you mentioned Dachau, I think already since the 1980s it's widespread among historians and others that there were certainly no death camps as they're labeled in the mainstream on the what's the actual territory of Germany. Now there's another camp of semi-revisionism that claims that Jews were sent to be gassed in the east at the Treblinka, the Reinhardt camps, Treblinka, Sobibor, Majdanek, Belzec. But even Auschwitz is it has not been proven. In fact, revisionists, the Leuchter Report, the Rudolph Report, Nick Kollerstrom's book, Breaking the Spell, all this scientifically proves that these so-called, supposed, presumed genocide of Jews by industrial means in gas chambers cannot have functioned as we have been taught. It's impossible.
Can I slightly disagree with you there? I've read some of these books as research for various interviews I've done over the years on commercial and on independent media. And I find some of these books and the narrative and the way they're written, very compelling. I'm not sure I would go along with proof. I think, you know, theories and well-written and well-thought-out theories. But I don't know about proof, Alison. I mean, I don't want to dwell too much on this, but, you know, a lot of Allied soldiers liberated internment camps where Jews had been kept, and they wrote about and described terrible, terrible things. And I think for us to say that all of these people were under the spell of, you know, Zionists, or they were being controlled, I just can't buy that. Again, I'm going to put my cards on the table. I've always had a problem with the number 6 million. I've always had a huge problem with that. And I've never been ashamed. I've always put my hand up and said, look, I don't get this number. I think it's an obscene number. I it's not because I don't want to believe it, because it's evil. I just find it hard to accept that they could have managed to do away with so many numbers, given the, I suppose, all the problems that they had fighting on two fronts, not to mention the, you know, having the wherewithal to do that, the utilities to do that. I've always had a problem with that. My big problem has always been with the exploitation of what happened to Jews. And again, we'll come to that in a minute. But what about those Allied soldiers and all those other independent accounts who said, who described these horrible things that they witnessed when they went to Belsen and Sobibor and Dachau, which of course was famous for experiments. What about those people?
Well, the first camp to be liberated in the east was Majdanek. And that was liberated, of course, by the Soviets. And what I believe in, and other revisionists believe now, is that the Soviets, who, in brackets, the Soviet Bolsheviks, they killed how many ethnic Russians? Why do we not hear about all those millions of deaths? But anyway, coming back to Majdanek, when the liberators arrived, they described this camp as the SS extermination camp. And as propaganda spread, and in fact, when the Western liberators came to liberate the camps, Buchenwald, Dachau, etc., these troops needed to be galvanized to protect them, to shield them from the shock of what they found, because we mustn't forget that the Allied bombing, saturation bombing of Germany, had basically wiped out not only all the infrastructure, but civilian areas as well. When the soldiers arrived and saw what their side had done to Germany, they needed to be galvanized. So the Allied leaders copied this Soviet propaganda. The first camp Eisenhower visited, one of the first camps is called Ohrdruf. We never hear about it again. But 2 or 3 days after, you can check, all these documents are online, available, Eisenhower visited, and they put these photos, famous photos, piles of bodies, etc., and said, well, you know, yes, the Allies did saturate. We flattened all these towns and cities in Germany. But look, the vanquished were even more evil than we were. Look what they did to the Jews. And it's all mass propaganda lies. That's really what I think.
That's what you think.
I think there's enough documentation to support it.
I've had an email. We had a pre-chat today, and I said I was going to ask you a question, and I said it will probably come in anyway. And we have had an email from somebody called Alan Barr or Bayer, B-A-H-R. Alan is listening in North Manchester. He's Jewish. And he's written a 2-paragraph email. I'm not going to read all of it, but he says he likes open discussion and he's happy to hear from anybody with any opinion. But he suspects that people like Alison, whether they want to admit it or not, they hide behind freedom of speech, and they hide behind, we just want to know what really happened, when really they ultimately despise Jews and everything Jewish. What do you say to that? Because Jews will say, when you were on Twitter, I don't know if you're back on Twitter or not, Jewish men and women, some of them, you know, using disgusting language and they shouldn't do it. But others, more moderate, say, Alison, you just hate Jews. When people say you hate Jews, what do you say to that?
I remember years ago, Richie, one of my cousins who's a devout Christian, telling me that she felt sorry for the Jews, and it was a terrible shame. And another point is that, you know, Gilad Atzmon, he says if you look at Jewish history, it's just one long chain of disasters, you know, one after the other. I don't think anybody can say from my songs, from my discourse, what I've been saying over the past 10 minutes or so, anybody could, with any reason, claim that it's inciting hatred or going out to, going out and inciting people to go and kill Jews. I've made fun of Jews in songs, yes, but that's. We have a long tradition of satire in the UK. If I do hate anyone, Richie, it's the our corrupt establishment figures who allow this targeting of people like me, who incite the police to come and harass my elderly parents, both of whom have been quite sick over the past months. And my mother's had a grueling chemotherapy, a big operation at the beginning of this month. And 2 days ago, my dad had a massive heart attack. And the police know full well that I'm staying with friends in London. But they've been round to my parents' house twice this week, looking for the charger of my computer that they seized 4.5 months ago.
I can't abide by that. And I meant what I said today when you told me your dad had been unwell like that. It's terrible. I can't avoid
that.
Yes,
and I think this has everything to do with, you know, yeah. it's partly to do with my situation. It's been that, and it's not really going to help my persecutor's point of view because, you know, it's a.
I'll tell you what I don't like, Alison, and I've said this on the programme a few weeks ago. Now, I've sent a couple of very polite communications to the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. First of all, to ask them about why they were carrying on with their letters to the Apollo. And then I said, well, look, why, if I take you at your word that you genuinely believe that, you know, David Icke or anybody connected with this show or anybody else is a genuine hater and they just hate Jewish people, well, let's have an open and a fair and a humble dialogue about that. Let's chat about it. What I can't tolerate, and I'm supposed to be objective here, but on this point it's difficult for me to be objective. This going after people and accusing people of things and saying things about people and then seemingly kind of running away as they did over the ludicrous allegations they made about David and Holocaust denial, which ironically they used a video which actually negated the point they said they were trying to make. In the video, David talks about the secret society of the Rothschild family and Rothschild Zionism. Now, Jews are every bit as much a victim of it as anybody else. And he's never denied the Holocaust. And I look at what you've been doing. And again, I should be objective and keep my own bloody opinion out of it. I don't see hate. I don't. But what I would say to you is, and I'll ask you this and I'll get out of your way and you can take as long as you want to answer it. People like you who want to talk about the exploitation of the persecution of Jews, do you need to find better ways of doing it? Do you need to box more clever with these people?
Well, yeah, no. I think that the revisionist argument, I think that the anti-revisionists, those who cling to these myths of gas chambers, I think they lost the debate several decades ago in the 80s by banning all public discourse. You know, they've got laws in France, Germany, Spain, Switzerland, 16 European countries. They have got laws which you can end up in jail for even asking a question. Did 6 million really die? Were the gas chambers used to kill Jews? You can get locked up for these things in Europe. This is what really got me working as a revisionist. When I saw the persecution of this in our so-called democratic and free societies, where are we here? We're in the UK. We're not in North Korea or in China. And my grandfather was killed age 23, bombed by the Luftwaffe. He was in Dunkirk. He'd managed to escape back to the UK. He was bombed to bits age 23. My dad grew up without a father. We were fairly anti-German family growing up, as I'm sure many of your listeners will be able to understand. But I was taught that his death was for our freedoms. I would never act like any of my persecutors, writing letters to their employers or trying to no-platform people or to deny them their freedom of speech. But these people, these tribal, medieval, suspicious people, they are trying to impose their law, their tribal laws, in my home country. And it's not right.
We could certainly talk all night about the Jewish lobby, the Zionist lobby in the UK, its influence on UK politics. I mean, Jesus, we could be here all night talking about its influence on American politics. And it's terribly wrong. And there is no discourse about this on television. You know, one of the things I suspect explains a lot of these ridiculous laws that people can't talk about the Holocaust or ask questions about the evidence. A lot of it, I believe, Alison, is to do with preventing people ever understanding how Hitler came to power and who funded and supported him. And we're talking some of the biggest industrialists in the world who wanted a post-World War II Europe run by Nazi Germany in which they could basically claim all the spoils. You know, going back to the Ottoman Empire, the breakup of the Ottoman Empire, the Sykes-Picot Agreement, all this sort of stuff that people don't know. I think a lot of the garbage that people like you put up with, and I'm not just having a go at the campaign against anti-Semitism, there are a number of groups like this who behave in the way they do, and it's tragic that they do. What they should do is embrace open dialogue and say, right, let's have a conversation then. This is why we think why we believe you're racist, and then you say, or we or anybody else says, well this is what we believe. You're right, the legal cutting off and shutting down of any discussion about it is wrong. And prosecuting you for your songs is bloody wrong, even if I disagree with you. And I'm not sure what I agree with. Yeah.
We Brits, we're not being allowed to fight for our own ethnic, for our own national interests here, whereas pretty much every other lobbying group can do it. We have Black Lives Matters, we have the Jewish lobby, but I agree, Richie. We need open debate. Everything should be open. There's a political correctness, not being able to say certain things. It's free speech is the wellspring of democracy. I think it was Cicero. The base of all civic rights is our right to be able to express ourselves freely without boundaries, and that's also in the European Human Rights Act. So we will see what happens with my case if the Crown is able to bring a...
Well, ironically, I want to talk about that. Ironically, we're talking when the UK has triggered Article 50, allegedly.
Yeah.
I say allegedly because it's such a mess and there's so much obfuscation about to come down the road, I believe. But, you know, again, not to labour the point, but the European Union came out of the failure of the Rothschild banking dynasty and their industrialist stooges to control Europe. That's where the European Union came from. Ironically, here are you and I talking about freedom of speech today. So look, before we talk about what you expect to happen with the case, you can look a Jewish man or woman in the eye and say, I don't hate you because of who you are. Now, the reason I ask this again is because I'm going to give you a bit of a kick in the arse here. And you don't have to take it. But why... And I believe you, Alison, but why would you go and speak to a group like Blood and Honour? Now, hang on a second. A Jewish person might say, all right, Alison, I'll take you at face value. But these are unashamed racists, these types of people. Why would you converse with them? How would you respond to that?
I went on a nine-day eight-city tour to Canada, and I had no idea what to expect, and... Well, I had no idea what I was getting into, but I tell you that was the most fun evening. There were three little old ladies sitting in the front row at this Blood and Honour, you know, and quite a lot of younger men, let's say, and these three little old ladies they giggled all the way through my songs. It was heartwarming. It was by far the best gig of them all, and you know, my name was in the paper. the following day, I was on the front pages of the National Post, Richard Warman and Benai Briss complaining, making the association that I was partly responsible, you know, Canada, the Canadian immigration authorities allowing, you know, this notorious British Holocaust denier into Canada to spread hatred of Jews. Well, they said also that this was to partly to blame for all these bomb threats against synagogues, you know, and we found out last week that the threats had been created by this Israeli Jew, 19-year-old.
Yeah. Now, that's outrageous,
their
by the way.
Their accusations fall a bit flat. They always want to, you know, make a kind of amalgam, a reference of... Why shouldn't Blood and Honour have their right to speak? We have the JDL, the Jewish Defence League, who have their right to speak. Why shouldn't these groups have?
Listen,
I'm not denying
them that, but it's about boxing clever again, because it's not all lovely little old ladies who are associated with groups like Blood and Honour. There are some proper bastards, Alison. And again, it's just about boxing clever. You know, to talk about the exploitation of the Holocaust for the promotion of Zionism and the State of Israel and everything else, which I think we should be having a discussion all the time. But again, not to press you on this, but before we talk about the case, you know, a Jewish man or woman listening to this might say, well, you know, she's not doing herself any favours by associating with people like that, many of whom do advocate violence against people. When we know that. I mean, Combat 18 type people...
Well, I don't think there was any Combat 18 there. It was a private group, a private meeting. Like I say, I arrived there. My agents in Canada had organised these groups. I really had no idea, but it was I sang my satirical songs. That was it. I did my job.
I think. I personally think the songs are, you know, are satirical. Look. What about this case then? I mean, initially the CPS didn't want to have anything to do with it, quite rightly didn't want to have anything to do with it, and the campaign against anti-Semitism were left to their own devices. But now it seems the Crown is interested in taking the case again. What does that mean? What's happening right now?
Yes, it raises some quite serious questions about our judicial system and democracy, because the Crown Prosecution Service is, of course, the body which decides who is going to be prosecuted for what crime. But now it would seem that we have the campaign against anti-Semitism, which is trying to lay down the law. Obviously, it's a political case. You know, it's not even about me personally. It's about the Israel lobby trying to set a legal precedent so that they can then bring in the similar kind of laws that exist already in Europe to prevent open discussion and open debate.
So, Alison, you believe... Sorry to interrupt.
...the Holocaust and Jewish power.
Sorry to interrupt, but you suspect that the reversal of... the change of heart by the Crown Prosecution Service, you suspect that there's something a bit untoward about that. You expect that there might be some, let's say, supporters of Israel, political pressure behind it, right?
Well, I think that the first hearing on the 15th of December, that was my solicitor asked for the case to be adjourned while the CPS review the case. And the judge then, it wasn't Chief Magistrate Arbuthnot, it was another judge, she set a date for the trial, which meant, in fact, that if the Crown did take over, they would have to then proceed to trial. That's why it's not been discontinued. It may still happen. I don't know. That will be down to the legal arguments, which are happening on June the 23rd, which is the anniversary of Brexit also.
Which is the anniversary of Brexit. Look, just before we part company, are you concerned about it? I mean, what if it went against you, what would it do?
Well, I think, you know, whichever way it goes, Ricky, you know, if the case is thrown out, okay, fine. If I win, I win. Great. But if I lose and I'm convicted of, you know, hate crime, well, for these satirical songs, won't that pretty much say that what I'm singing about is true? That you know, that the Jews do have too much power within the judiciary. And the judge who gagged me, why was she sitting in the first place, you know? There's obviously political manoeuvring going on in the background, and it's wrong. And well, I really don't know what's going to happen. Perhaps it would be in the establishment's interest to just, you know, go quiet about it and let me get on with what I do.
I think you're asking some really interesting questions. But there's always a but, isn't there? It's not that there's a but. I don't mean but. I would just box clever, and by box clever, I wouldn't be in any way saying that you should gag yourself or you should be in any way dishonest of yourself. I wouldn't say that at all. But I think we need to remember when we're taking on Zionism and talking about it and what it really is and what it really does. We should remember, all of us, not you, I'm not saying this to you, a lot of people who listen to programmes like this should acknowledge that, you know, there are, I reckon, millions of Jewish men and women, and again, I want to repeat, because I get hammered, Judaism is a religion, like Catholicism. Judaism is not an ethnicity, it isn't. But there are lots of Jews around the world, they despise Israel as well. There are lots of other Jews who are agnostic about politics. They couldn't give a damn, but they take it the wrong way. They take it as persecution against them and their right to exist and their right to live free. And I think we just have to be kind of aware of that. But we should never be, we should never censor ourselves because a group that hasn't the courage to come into a public forum and treat you like a man or a woman. And I'm talking about groups like the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, who should have the courage and the moxie to say, all right, we'll come and debate with you. Because if they really believed what it is they say they believe, and I doubt it, if they really believed it and if they were passionate about it, I think they'd be very quick to come to the table and sit down and say, right, let's have a conversation. But they don't.
There's too much at stake.
Yeah, they threaten people, they harass people, and it's unacceptable. They shouldn't do that. I'm going to give you the absolute final word, Alison, and you can mention your blog, by the way. I should have done that already. Mention your WordPress site. You've the last word, and then for now we'll part company, but I do obviously want to invite you back on again in the future when there's news. So the last word is yours.
Thank you. Well, Richie, if you send me an address, I'd like to post you one of my EPs with my songs on it. So
definitely,
that in the future, perhaps when the case is over, you'll be able to play
one
of my songs. And thank you very much for inviting me on. We'll see tomorrow if I get arrested. I'm going to visit my dad in hospital and take the charger from my computer, if I can find it, to the police station. So, you know, it might be a trick. As soon as I get in there, they'll say, oh, yeah, it's you, we're arresting you for appearing on Richie Allen.
Yeah, yeah.
And saying all this stuff. But thanks very much, and thanks for all the people who are supporting me. It's really heartwarming. I was saying to another friend last night that in my lefty liberal days, my friends would do their own thing, but now I've got quite a different set of friends, and we really do look after each other and support each other. And I'm so glad to be here, and.
Well, look, thanks very much for coming on. The best of luck with the case. Obviously, we'll be in touch a lot, you and I, and
yes,
we'll watch it closely. Alison Chablo, good luck, and we'll talk again real soon. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Richie. Bye-bye.
It was great. Thank you. Alison Chablo on the line to us there from her home. There's a number of articles in the Mail and BBC Online and other places about the case. I repeat again, and I will send a copy of my conversation with Alison to the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism tomorrow, and I will repeat my offer for them, or for a representative of that group, to come on this programme in an atmosphere of humility and an atmosphere of conversation to talk about these issues. I don't expect we'll be taken up on that offer. That might be a bit unfair, me saying that, but I don't expect that they'll take us up on that offer. They behaved pretty badly, let's be honest about it, here in January, when they made all sorts of allegations about the content of David's Worldwide Wake Up Tour without having a clue. They were invited to send somebody to spend a day there. They declined. They asked people to contact them with their tales of anti-Semitism, and they never published anything. And I know they were sent a lot of emails. I know that Jewish men and women, one particular Jewish woman who was in attendance, who'd come from Israel to watch David, who was in attendance in Manchester, emailed them because she copied us in on the email to say very politely and very nicely, look, I went to see David, there was nothing remotely racist about it. And none of those emails were published. I don't like people behaving like that. I find it cowardly. You know, if you want to have a go at somebody and you want to undermine somebody and you want to embarrass them and you want to imposition them, have the guts to stand in front of them and look them in the eye and say, I sincerely believe that there's something wrong with your message. I sincerely believe that you're targeting somebody or targeting people, and this is why I believe that. And then have a conversation about it like grown-ups and do that in public, where people can listen and hear both sides of it and make an educated and informed opinion then on what they've heard. But this particular group, and maybe they'll prove me wrong, they might come on the programme in the future, thus far, they throw mud at people and then run for the hills. That's not good enough. It's not good enough. You know, you want to talk about openness, you want to talk about information, you want to talk about fairness. Well, meet somebody halfway and have a conversation about it, is what I say. Coming up for 9 minutes past the hour, this is the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting proudly on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, Alternate Current Radio, and TuneIn Radio as well. You are listening to Alison Shablow. You can find Alison online. If you put Alison Shablow in to any search engine, you will get her blog. I'll tweet it anyway. And if you go on YouTube, you'll find her videos and you'll find her music, and you can make your own mind up. Simple as that. Make your own mind up. Okay. Right. I think it's time for another very quick break. When we come back, one or two more things to tell you. And then, shortly, Dana Durnford joins us from British Columbia. You don't want to miss him back in a minute.
Do not invest another pound of your money until you've heard this message. Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my new best-selling book. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk for full details. Inside, I reveal why gold could soar to $10,000 an ounce and how to make sure you own enough of the right type of gold. To get your copy dispatched today, go to newcaseforgold.co.uk now. This book will change everything you think you know about investing in gold. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk today.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they're doing.
Traffic 2, available now at premillionpictures.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Looking to arrange a mortgage? Confused by all the deals available? Let Manchester Mortgages do the work for you. Take advantage of our free mortgage review offer throughout February and March and see if we can save you money. We are whole of market brokers with access to hundreds of mortgage schemes across the UK. Call us on 0161 706 0242 or go to manchestermortgages.co.uk. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Manchester Mortgages are a trading style of mortgages for you, North West Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Welcome back to the programme. Great to be with you this Wednesday, 29th of March 2017. Just to remind you, got a really interesting programme tomorrow. Julie Kelly is a fascinating lady based in Illinois. She writes for a lot of very well-known newspapers on America's East Coast. She is a cookery teacher. She became very famous a few years ago. Young woman with a family, vivacious, smart, as anything, and her opinions are most definitely her own. Why do I say that? Because she promotes genetically modified ingredients. She promotes even genetically engineered food. Now, I reached out to Julie last week. In fact, she was due to be on the programme the evening of the attack in London. So obviously that was put to one side. She graciously understood that. And we've basically arranged for her to come back on the programme tomorrow. So she is an absolute advocate of genetically engineered food. She thinks that those of us who question biotech companies like Monsanto, their motives, the way they operate, and everything else, I'm not going to get into it now, there's too much to get into, and I don't have the time now. She believes that we're wrong, basically. But she likes a debate. So she's going to come on the programme tomorrow night. We'll have a good 40, 45 minutes, and we're going to talk about biotech companies, GE food, GM foods, and more of that. This is important. It's the sort of stuff we keep preaching about, and we're practicing there. We're going to speak with people who disagree with us, but people who are genuine. She's not a Monsanto shill. She doesn't work for anybody. She believes it. So let's get her on. Let's have a conversation. We're going to do that tomorrow. I'm going to do more of that going forward, because ultimately the aim here is to speak to people and reach people who wouldn't ordinarily give us the time of day, right? So we'll do that tomorrow. Julie Kelly joins the programme tomorrow. Looking forward to it. Right, 15 minutes past the hour. Shortly, Dana Durnford will be on from British Columbia. He's had decades of experience as a commercial deep-sea diver and commercial fisherman. He's blown the whistle on what he calls the death of life in the Pacific Ocean. Amongst the things Dana believes, and his website is thenuclearproctologist.org, he believes that the radiating of the Pacific Ocean is also causing some of these anomalous weather events, these inexplicable storms, these crazy storms. So Dana is excellent. He's not been with us for 5 or 6 months. He's going to come back on again in a few minutes. Again, he was due to be on last week, but with everything that happened in London, we had to put that on the back burner. Got some Charles Aznavour for you now. Here he is. But it's Charles Aznavour on the Richie Allen Show.
Nous avions tous deux un rendez-vous amoureux mercredi à 8h dans ma demeure. Où il y avait sur une nappe blanche brodée, il y avait du caviar sur les toasts beurrés, il y avait du pain bidé hors d'œuvre varié. Il y avait un faisan rôti sur le canapé. Il y avait un magnum de champagne frappé, éclairé par 4 bougies allumées. Sur la table, il y avait du fromage, des fruits, des sablés. Il y avait de la liqueur et du café du Brésil. Le temps a passé, quand minuit a sonné, j'avais si faim vraiment que bêtement. Oui! Attablé, seul devant ta place inoccupée, j'ai mangé le caviar sur les toasts beurrés, ouais, ouais, ah, j'ai mangé le pain bilé hors d'œuvre varié, j'ai mangé le faisan rôti sur le canapé, j'ai vidé le magnum de champagne frappé, éclairé par 4 bougies allumées. Sur la table, j'ai mangé le fromage, les fruits, les sablés, arrosé par la liqueur et le café du Brésil. te trompant de jour le lendemain, mon amour, quand tu vins à 8h dans ma demeure. Eh ouais, il restait sur une nappe blanche tachée. Ah, il restait les reliefs d'un repas consommé. Le caviar, les hors d'œuvre s'étaient envolés. Le faisan n'était qu'un petit tas d'os rongé. Le magnum avait un air de fête passée. Les bougies étaient tendues et consumées. Sur la table, il restait quelques fruits des miettes de sablé. La liqueur et le café qui étaient glacés du Brésil. Je n'avais plus rien et pour tromper notre faim, nous avons décidé de nous aimer.
Charles Aznavour, Sur la Table. Now to yesterday's programme. I was looking for a gap where I could have a chat about this. We put some stuff on social media yesterday, and I talked on the programme yesterday about the removal of advertising from all of our videos by Google, YouTube, which happened late last week and resulted in us losing 5 days' revenue, which is a big deal for us. I mentioned this yesterday, it's a big, big deal. And it caused a lot of unease yesterday, you know, between Simon, who does the YouTube channel, looks after it for us, and myself, and one or two people who help out with the programme in various ways. We're very uneasy about it. What it means is that next month, effectively, we'll have lost 5 whole days. All of the videos were had advertising removed from them. They hadn't been demonetized, bizarrely, as I said yesterday. Now, this is on foot of what YouTube and Google had said were complaints from increasing amounts of big clients of theirs who place their ads with Google and trust Google in placing those ads on YouTube videos, and they do that through AdSense. Now, today, some of our videos are showing advertising, not all of them, some of them. And I don't know what's going on with that. I have no idea. I'm glad that some of the videos have begun to display ads again, but I have no idea if I should get excited about that, if I should be thrilled about that, or cautiously optimistic, or pay no attention to it and wait and see what happens over the next week or so. Because undoubtedly, YouTube and Google have gone and said that any content in the future, remotely political, talking about wars, conflicts, politics, anything like that, cannot be monetized through advertising, which means we're screwed, basically, because we obviously talk about politics, wars, geopolitical events, that sort of thing. So where are we now today? I don't know. Some videos showing ads for some people, but on some browsers, they're not showing at all. And again today, we received no revenue whatsoever. They're always 2 days behind. So they tell you on the 29th, this is your revenue for the 27th and all the previous days before that. We've had at least 5 days with no revenue. And I wasn't aware of this because it happened late last week and over the weekend. Now, when I mentioned this yesterday, a number of you donated to the programme. Some of you for the first time. Others who regularly donate did donate. And a huge thanks for that. I didn't expect it and I didn't ask for it yesterday. I did say that ongoing, in the future, we are maybe going to have to depend more on our listeners than maybe we thought we would have to. You know, we were getting to the stage where we were confident that YouTube monetization, Google AdSense monetization would cover us. We would get to that stage and it would cover us forevermore. But that's obviously changed with what's happened over the last week or so. So to everybody who sent some money yesterday, in light of what happened, in light of the fact that we lost that Google revenue, that YouTube revenue for 5 days, a huge thanks. I can't say thanks enough. All I would say is, in the future, if you can afford it, only if you can afford it, set up a recurring donation of a couple of quid, the price of a cup of coffee, once a month, that's all it has to be. You're not going to feel it at all, but we will then not have to worry about the eventuality. And the eventuality is, I'm convinced, that in the very, very near future, we won't be able to generate income with Google and with YouTube. I think what we've seen over the last 5-6 days is a taste of it. And it was scary. It was scary because it's a full-time job for us. This is all we do, obviously. But we're just going to have to wait and see what's going on. It kind of looks like they don't know what's going on themselves. And it might be that they're struggling to implement their own policy. Right? So, again, thanks to those of you who generously contributed yesterday. It was a wonderful thing. I didn't solicit that. I didn't. I was very angry talking about YouTube and Google yesterday. But I'm glad you did. It is a huge help. And like I said, and I'm not going to say this again this week. I'm not even going to say it next week. Have a think about it. Couple of quid a month recurring through PayPal or through the bank account details on richieallen.co.uk. You won't feel that ever, but we will. It's a huge thing for us going forward. Right, 23 minutes past the hour. It's time to get Dana Durnford back on the programme. In the meantime, let me remind you again that Julie Kelly, the cook, the author, the journalist, will be on the programme tomorrow talking about Monsanto and other biotech companies. I'm actually going to take some more music, is what I'm going to do. I've got some Black Crowes. When we come back, Dana Durnford will be on the programme. And this is serious, serious stuff, this. He's going to be talking about Fukushima, the Pacific Ocean, what's going on with that. This is Hard to Handle, cover version by the Black Crowes on your Richie Allen Show. Hey!
Chemicals, the mama, I'm sure all the hand and I just around. I don't speak loud in the words, and I'm a man of great experience. I know you got another man, but I can love you better than him. Take my hand, don't be afraid, I'm gonna prove every word I say. I'm advertising love for free, so you can place your ad to me. Once I come along and down by the dozen, I ain't nothing but kissing love. Hey, little thing, let me light your candle, calls a mama, I'm sure all the hand and I just around.
Right, it's time to carry on because we want to have as much time as we can with our next guest. He's a brilliant man, a vastly, vastly experienced deep sea diver, and commercial fisherman. Go and read him. His website is thenuclearproctologist.org, thenuclearproctologist.org. I first learned about him, or learned of him, when I was making television programmes in London a few years ago. He's trying to raise the alarm about the real effects and the lasting effects and the terminal effects of the Fukushima nuclear disaster, the effects on the global ecosystem. He's an absolutely outstanding guy. He's in British Columbia. Let's welcome back to the programme Dana Durnford. Dana, welcome back.
Thank you, Richie. Awesome. Good to be here.
And listen, thanks for your patience. This is, I think, the fourth time you were due to be on in the last few days.
Yeah.
But stuff it's is okay. Going on, but you're very patient, and I do appreciate that. Listen, straight up, it's been 5-6 months since you're on the programme. What have you learned about I don't want to use, you know, grandiose, I don't want to use fluffy terms,
sure,
but the ecosystem of the Pacific Ocean. What do we know about the health of the Pacific Ocean that is not being talked about on cable news channels, that's not being written about in the broadsheet newspapers? What's going on with the Pacific?
Yeah, it's something else. And so the ocean is in great distress for 6 years. And, you know, nuclear is such a complicated convoluted subject. There's 9,000 facets to nuclear, a million corporations dependent upon nuclear, you know, and the military and the hospitals and everything else. And there's just cancer treatment. And there's just so many other things going on, weapons and nuclear power plants themselves. So there's all this stuff going on. And so people get all these different interpretations of what nuclear is and what it does and what it's good for, what it's not. And then we have terrorist laws because of nuclear, but then you're always told it's like a banana. So I just wanted to throw all that there, really confuse everybody before I say anything else. And because this is what you're dealing with when you talk about nuclear. And so what we do know is that we've seen events that we've never seen before in the history of the oceans on this planet, where we see, for instance, the mass starvation of killer whales. Now, killer whales, they're the apex, and so they eat birds, they eat otters, they eat porpoises, they eat whatever they want. There's no limit. They just go ahead and eat it, and they're the cannibals of the ocean. So not the cannibals of the ocean, but they're able to consume anything in the ocean. They're the top of it. And yet they are emaciated. That is really stunning and really staggering. And last year here in British Columbia, Canada, and the coastline of America, 48 whales have washed ashore. Now, they had all starved to death and were all emaciated. We've seen the same thing with the birds. We just seen 100 million salmon. They were emaciated. They died from starvation, and they were emaciated. The birds had died from starvation, and we're talking unbelievable numbers. And these birds that I'm talking about in particular were the saltwater common murre, and they can dive up to 600 feet deep. And so if anything can eat a smorgasbord when it wants to, it would normally be the saltwater murres. And so if they're starving to death, that is the harbinger of the problems for sure. And so then we see this incredible diversity that of 4 million species, this incredible healthy ocean, literally turned into a desert and not able to sustain life. And so, like, nobody wants to point the finger. Nobody wants to be that person who says, gee, you don't suppose this could be an extinction event? And you can't blame anybody from trying to avoid. I went out and spent 260 days, 15,000 miles to document it before I was able to say unequivocally that there's an extinction event. And even now, it still sounds bizarre saying it, and yet I can't disprove it. And so I work all day, every day now, years at this, trying to disprove it or hope that I'm wrong. And I'm not. And so we've never expected anything like this. But what happens was studies in the 50s and the 60s on eggs, larvae, and small fry for, say, salmon and herring. And these are very basis of food chains besides the microscopic world, but they're the bigger animals we're very familiar with. And so birds are familiar, have to eat that. Migratory animals will follow herring and mackerel and sardines and squid, et cetera, these feeder fish around the ocean for months at a time. And so you get millions of birds and all the whales and seals. Now, we've seen this collapsed, and another manifestation was the coastline of North America, where we see sea lions are so emaciated they're not producing milk and abandoning their babies, and the babies are going ashore. And normally when a baby goes ashore, if it gets lost or its parent is died or something like this and it's abandoned, it can go ashore. And low tide shows up, even if it's not healthy, it can start suckling on rocks that are full of up to 700 algaes, up to 480 species of worms right there in that little zone. There would be 78 species of sea anemones. And these are the indigenous normal everyday population. There'd be 78 species of starfish, highly visible 6,000 species of invertebrates with the backbones. They're like little shrimp, but visible, a majority of them would have been visible in the algaes. And there was just this incredible diversity of snails, mollusks, and periwinkles, and clams, like shellfish type. And abalone, I'm sure people are probably familiar with it, or scallops. And just this incredible, unbelievable mass color of colors. And each of these species, many of these are different colors. And so the animals, birds can come ashore and just feed right there if they couldn't find their normal feeder fish and just fly along the coastline and find a bunch of food and go down and eat. But they didn't. And they didn't go down 600 feet and find the food. In fact, The big diopter, we had found them way inland in Alaska in a freshwater lake. There was 8,000 dead murres, saltwater murres. We've never seen that before in freshwater lakes, up in one corner, and they were emaciated, had starved to death. And so everything we're talking about had starved to death and disappeared, like the herring and anchovies and squid and the mackerel. And the basis of the food chain itself, that is, you know, it's something we take for granted, and but the whole ecosystem is dependent upon it. So when that crashed, we expected everything else to start crashing, and we hoped.
And it is. And it is. Because our listeners are screaming now. They're screaming at the radio.
I bet.
They're screaming at me to say, Richie, can Dana validate this? I'm going to endorse what Dana said because I've been following him for a few years. Local media outlets, small media, are reporting. Briefly, they're not following up, but briefly reporting
right.
on much of what Dana is talking about. But it's not being picked up nationally.
So these, and it's not being associated with radiation.
No, this is the thing. It's not. Nobody wants to find out why it's happening. So the primary food source, the waterborne food source for birds, for big mammals like whales and sea lions, the primary water food source is gone, and that yes. secondary food source on the shoreline is gone as well. And then you have all right. these animals washing up, and they are not to use the word that might offend people, but almost anorexic. They have wasted away
Absolutely.
To nothing, right?
Yeah, and then the baby seals, I'll just cut you off in 1 second, they'll still eat the rocks, and they were farting it with 10, 15 pounds of rocks in their stomach, but there was no nutrients on the rocks. And so that's why they had finally died. We're talking like 10,000 on one island. And so that can't happen in nature, but it did. And just all of these manifestations are highly visible. And, of course, I cover this extensively. I have flushed out every aspect, 5,000 pictures of the reactors in Japan, 60,000 studies on radiation, man-made radiation. And then, you know, I cherry-pick because I have so much, such an incredible diversity of material. And I've covered over 13,000 headlines in the last number of years on this subject. And not only that, I had, before Fukushima happened, I had 7,000 lectures on nuclear, but I was also 14,000 hours underwater as a commercial diver. And so I was just one of these really just, you know, people that shouldn't really exist, but does exist and doesn't really show themselves, but then all of a sudden understood, you know, that you have to go to bat for something that you know, and you have to be able to prove it and back it up and verify it. And so I've taken it to the extremes where I have over 200,000 pictures of the coastline, and the majority of that is going to be up at my website, The Nuclear Proctologist, in chronological order. We uploaded the documentation after we come home. That took months with the GPSs of these spots in the hopes, all of this in the hopes we have solutions or come up with mitigation or come up with ways forward or actually address the issue. Or, you know, warn people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there's 8 million other species on the planet, and the Pacific is 4 million of those. And it looks like we just lost half to – not looks like it, but from what – I can't find anything to counter. And I'm so methodical, and I'm so wary of saying anything that I can't – you
can't
look
prove.
Up yourselves.
Yeah. And, of course, you're not getting any help because you should have – every marine biologist in the world should be working with you.
Yeah, they should, yeah. No. And they don't want to give someone like me any kind of credibility because I'm pretty – at this stage, right, I'm pretty upset. But I've calmed down a lot in the last year or so. I got 6 gag orders against me. That kind of helps calm me down a little.
They've
tiny
tried
bit,
to shut you up, haven't they? They've tried to shut you up and stop you
saying this stuff. They've come after me pretty tough. I don't back down. I don't walk away. Once I'm committed, I'm committed forever.
Can I, whole history.
You're
amazing. Your courage is amazing. Let me just make a couple of statements about the plant at Fukushima. Now, if I say anything incorrect, jump on me right straight away because you know far more about this than I do. From what I've been able to glean through my research, using you of course, the nuclearproctologist.org, but all the official sources, 80% of the radioactivity ended up in the Pacific. 80%. That's what I've been able to determine.
Okay, well, a lot of it's still up in the upper and lower troposphere.
Yeah.
And so probably 50% of it is still up there in that ocean. Go ahead.
And that's coming down in rainfall, right?
That will like if it was just a single plume went up there, it would take about 10 years to rain out. I don't think the plume stopped coming out, but we know it continued to come out all the way till November. And so, yeah, it could take 1,000 years for it to rain out if that's all it was. No, we're in real trouble, yeah. So that affects the ozone, too. That'll eat. You know, it's electrically charged, yeah. Go ahead.
Ken Buesler, who writes for PBS, he's been saying as late as last summer that radiation from the reactors continues to leak into the Pacific Ocean. What rate of contaminated water is still flowing into the Pacific Ocean? Some people say it's hundreds of gallons a day. Some people say it's thousands of gallons. What is it, Dave?
Right, I can't
you don't know.
Comment on certain people. I have 6 gag orders, so I can't comment there on that one. But on that particular person because of gag orders. But let me answer that question for you. Simply, it works this way. The radiation was distributed throughout the entire country of Japan heavily. It continued to come out of there. So the whole country, every time it rained in that country, it would wash out to the Pacific, the whole country. All the mountains, all the trees, all the estuaries, rivers, lakes are highly radiated. Now, how this works is it radiates everything it comes in contact with. And so think about 1,000 screwdrivers and you got your car battery, and you're going to magnetize those screwdrivers. But then you're going to take the screwdrivers and throw them into boxes with nails in it. And so the nails are going to start becoming magnetized because you're going to leave them there. And blah, 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 blah. And so that'll magnetize any other metal it comes in contact with, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's what radiation does. And now not only that, the pollen becomes radioactive. It becomes mutated and carcinogenic and has – like, see, the way radiation man-made works is that our body rejects it. Our body attacks it immediately with white blood cells. And that displaces the red blood cells, which is carrying your oxygen and your nutrition through your body. And but the problem is normally with a flu or something like that, that's a few days. You feel weak. You feel tired, lethargic, and you get over the flu and you're better. But what happens here is that it sequesters in your muscles, your organs, in your bones. And your body attacks you relentlessly for decades and displacing oxygen permanently in your body. But more intently because it becomes frustrated and your body is kind of overloaded in itself with, and you make these white blood cells from your joints and from your spleen, but also from your joints in case your spleen is a problem. But generally it was your spleen, most people think of, but it's actually your joints will make it too, right? Okay, so in the environment of Fukushima, what's going on is the ground itself is highly radiated. The buildings are putting your gamma shine, x-rays, and neutrons, so they're radiating the ground and everything around it. Just from this weird phenomenon of x-rays and gamma shines and neutron bursts. I don't know if people can kind of wrap their minds around it, but it's like 300 or 400 feet away from the building, you can melt your organs. But you don't know that till about 2 weeks later if you walk past the building. And so let me answer the question. I'll give it up.
Has that happened to people? Just quickly, has that happened to people? Do we know that people have come?
Everybody you see in any picture close to the reactor, they died shortly after. No exceptions, because of the x-rays, gamma shines, neutrons, bursts, and stuff like this. We're talking about so the reactor cores are kept in water for that particular effect anyway, and water's a great absorber of that. So the buildings were so destroyed, there was no water. They melted down, so now you're left with the same thing as Chernobyl, for instance. So in Chernobyl, for instance, is a good example where they had went out with buses and jacked people off the streets and brought them in and put them on the roof. They done the same thing in Britain, by the way, for Sellafield. What he done them at theaters, they went and took people out of the two back rows of a theater and brought them into a nuclear reactor to push the fuel rods out when the 5,000 employees wouldn't do it. That's what they had done down in the UK during Sellafield before Winfield was what it was called before. I can't remember.
No, Sellafield, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, Fukushima, yeah, they've killed several hundred thousand homeless, destitute immigrants, people who don't speak the language. And they covered this up, obviously, because who's going to admit to something like that? But we have incredible amount of documentation of this happening. Once again, you know, I've covered over 13,000 headlines on the subject. And I do a lot. Now, also at the same time, they're burning radiation throughout the country. So every time it rains, and now the I still didn't answer that question, so let me stop and back up for 1 second. 300 tons a day is the number everybody here that's coming out of Fukushima into the Pacific Ocean. But that was based upon the fire hoses they originally brought in, and they were spraying salt water on the reactors at that time. And the salt water when you're spraying salt water on a reactor at 9,000 degree Fahrenheit temperatures, as you can imagine what's going to happen, that becomes ionized and radiated. But there's a phenomenon from spraying the salt water on the reactor. And so I'm going to back up again. So 300 tons a day was based upon the hose capacity. That's long since changed. So there's a lot more water being sprayed on it perpetually forever and ever and ever. But they're doing that throughout the site because the rods were exploded all over the site. They bulldozed it down and put 10 feet of cement and pavement on top of it so the homeless can go in there. And then they have to watch. All this had to be kept wet all the time. The mountain behind it, all the water that's running down through there. So roughly each day there's it's 4,500 tons normally a minute to cool the reactor down. And even if it's melted, it would still need that kind of water. That's 1 million gallons a minute, basically. And so when they talk about 300 tons a day, they're really truly just laughing in people's faces, literally spitting in people's faces when an academic or scientist says that publicly. They know better than they're naive or gullible or complacent. They actually know the difference.
So are you saying now, remember, you're talking to a layman. You're talking to...
Absolutely.
I'm an ordinary bloke. Are you saying that millions of gallons of water, irradiated water, is still flowing into the Pacific from there?
Each day. And that's just from the plant. Now, every time it rains or snows in that country, it's... because the Reactor 3 in Japan, when that blew up, that one went down. That was mixed oxide fuel. So this is not like a reactor at Chernobyl, for people who are not familiar. These were some of the biggest ones in the world. They were three times the size of Chernobyl. And Chernobyl was a 30% meltdown allegedly and stopped after 10 days. It was equal to 400 Hiroshima bombs in that period. Excuse me. But and the reactors in Japan had five, up to 20 years reactor cores. So they could have much more, but at least five reactor cores at the very top of the buildings. And they were been stored there for 10 to 20 years. So there's at least six reactor cores per building, whereas Chernobyl was a single reactor core, one-third the size of Japan reactors. So a significant difference. Well, I guess that's a... Now, on the ground, it was 9 million. There's 5 million pounds per building, and there's about 9 million pounds stored on the ground in one, what they call a common spent fuel pool at the Fukushima Daiichi. But there was 15 reactors in Japan along that stretch of coastline that was devastated, 400-kilometer zone. That tsunami went up to 10 kilometers and sure, they have to keep these things on the ocean because they need so much water. 10 of those couldn't go into cold shutdown. They went in a station blackout. These are two of the most feared terminologies ever uttered in the nuclear world.
And the media, and the media is silent. Not only the world's media, but the Japanese media is silent. I mean, you talked there about what they did to the homeless. I mean, David covered that extensively on davidicke.com/headlines. We've got 10 minutes to go, right? I just want to... You've said some things, and from what I can see, you're backing this up with evidence. And this is shocking. And this goes to the heart of the millions of gallons a day seeping into the Pacific. This is extraordinary stuff, cutting-edge stuff, this. You believe that the great Rocky Mountain glaciers are depleting, not because of man-made global warming, but because of this.
Yeah, because they would have come out and bludgeoned the daylights out of everybody if they could have linked it to global warming. And so they haven't uttered a word about it. And so a few people have started to talk about it. But for the last number of years, I went out and documented that too, right? The glaciers are missing throughout it. And it'll take millions of years to restore that after the radiation is gone. So that was the hot particles. The clouds will come into the coastline from the Pacific right away. Within days, these clouds were coming and hitting the mountains. They would lose a large percentage of their payload and then rise up and go over the Rocky Mountains. And so everything on the west side of the Rocky Mountains washed towards the Pacific, and everything on the east side of the Rocky would have went towards the Atlantic and the Gulf. And so the majority of the disposition would have went right back down into the Pacific. So that washes down through the communities and down to the coastlines where I done my studies. But the Rocky Mountains themselves, they control the estuaries, the lakes, the rivers, the insects, the small fry, the frogs and everything, the eggs that are and that the whole ecosystem of the water all the way to the Rocky Mountains, right? And so the whole coastline of Canada is all these rivers running from the mountains. So the cold water in the summer was the most important part of that ecosystem, that regular cold water keeping the temperature regulated all the way down to the coastline and the coastline. And
but
so
it's
that's
gone.
The devastation, yeah.
It's gone now.
Yeah.
So that,
it's gone.
That cold water
for sure.
Coming down from every summer, that cold water coming down is gone, and the devastation is... Do you know what I want to do? Before I forget this, folks, the nuclearproctologist.org, this man's a genius. and he's a humble genius, and he's on his own. His website is pretty easy to read. There's a lot of information on there, but he could do with some help. Now, if I'm talking out of turn, Dana, you feel free to tell me off.
I am, man. I'm so desperate.
You need help, mate.
The world to stand by. We need people to stand the ground.
We need people to stand up. And we have people listening to this program who are IT experts and might help improve the look of your website and make it more visible and more attractive.
It's pretty rough.
No, it's not rough. I'm so burnt out. Yeah.
And it's meant to keep it very plain, very simple, kind of eloquent in one sense, but I never quite got there. And the idea was to not try to convolute it or confuse people. But once again, we got a real event playing out. We can't ignore it. It's not going to go away.
Is
it's
it
not
permanent,
shut
Dana?
Off on its own.
Is it permanent?
Sure.
This is going to sound terrible. Don't take this the wrong way. People have to know this, but whether they know it or not, it's terminal anyway, isn't it? Nothing can be done about it.
Well, nothing. Yeah, we can do things, right? We can come up with water filtration systems. A sign of good faith would be to give everybody organic seeds and let them plant them everywhere, encourage that to happen, dump Monsanto on his head, get rid of the nasty, the convoluted war machine, and just try to find a way forward. And we could do it. We can't repair the ocean. We can't save the planet per se, but we can change the outcome. We can get rid of the old dinosaur on our back, this 900-pound gorilla that's been stomping us into the planet for millenniums. We can put an end to that. We can come together, wake up, end this whole reign of terror, and come up with solutions and mitigations and ways forward for the next generations to have some hope. Because if we lose the hope, we don't want to be on this planet when that happens. We have to keep hope alive, even if there is no hope.
Let me ask you this. You will know through your association with me, and we talk a couple of times a year probably, but there are those of us who make programs like this who believe that there is a global depopulation agenda. Do you agree with that? Do you think we're crazy?
Absolutely. No.
So
they're allowing this to happen, yeah.
Right. So
it's on purpose, yeah.
They're allowing it to happen. They make it happen. Which is it? Both?
I don't think they made this one happen. There was connotations of it, but I ended up looking at it to see if it was true, and I couldn't verify it. All I can do was disprove everything about it.
But they're happy enough that it's happened, and they're happy enough to allow it to destroy the Pacific.
The cover-up is full-blown, nonstop, and the people in charge are truly acting demonic in every sense of the word. It's really something how heartless and spineless and soulless these people are. They won't give us a chance. The planet it needs a chance, and it won't get us a chance unless we have to fight for that. No one's going to give us a chance. We have to take it. And so that's what I'm attempting to do, as humble as it is. I'm trying to build a resistance of educated people, and then that should help, right? Because that's the most I can do right now in the capacity.
You're doing an extraordinary job, Dana. I mean, it's thankless. I've been observing you for a few years. It's thankless. And I've just had an email from Albert. And Albert said, Richie, it just occurred to me, there is no barrier between the oceans. And I know exactly what he means by that. There's no big gate, protecting the Atlantic from the Pacific or from the Indian or from the Arctic. This is polluting every ocean on the planet, isn't it?
Right away, too, yeah. Yeah, well, the oceans are separated by temperature and salinity, and it's kind of like they assimilate into each other. Yeah, there's no barrier, of course, but it's a slow, methodical, but because it's in the upper troposphere, lower troposphere, it's raining out anyway. It's going to be like the cloud was nonstop around the planet, right to the ocean floor, right up into the stratosphere. It was continuous cloud for the first couple of years, nonstop, and everybody was breathing it in. All the animals, this is why we see the die-offs, the way we see them play out, the way they played exactly what you would expect under that condition. And it's horrifying, but we still got to fight. We got to deal with it. We got to gut up and face it because we can't ignore it. And the supercell storms we just seen in the last 6 years, that's the influences. You take grams a million watts and 5 million pounds, divided by a gram, and all these reactors releasing that into the environment, heated up the ocean, killed the ocean. And then Australia just got torn apart. Then we've seen China got torn apart with 235-mile-an-hour sustained winds. We've seen Philippines, 31 provinces, gutted, flattened, 15 million people, homes destroyed. We've never seen anything like it, only in a couple of mountain passes for a few moments. Never like a storm, 235-mile-an-hour sustained wind. That will strip everything in North America because we're not built for anything close to that, nor is anybody else. And I'll end it on this. When the people in the Philippines asked where they're going to rebuild, and they said, why? Why would we rebuild if we're going to have storms like that in the future?
And they're blaming it on that stupid. Yeah, they're blaming it on man-made global warming. It's got nothing to do with it.
No, it's only showed up since Fukushima, and it's almost strictly so far to the Pacific, but it's going to branch out, obviously, because the hotter ocean, right? And then the energy that you're talking about, they only needed a couple of degrees. We've seen up to 7 degrees. And so it's really, we're in a lot of trouble, yeah.
Do me a favor. TheNuclearProctologist.org. Folks, visit the website, bookmark it. Contact Dana through it and start a conversation with him. Dana, I've got...
Thank you, Richard.
No, mate, not at all. We've got 40 seconds left. They're yours. You have the last 40 seconds. What do you want our audience to do about this?
I want you to get educated. I want you to think of the future and think of your children, think of the insects, think of the animals all the time each day and mitigate it as much as you can. When it's raining out there, you're going to have to avoid the rain. You're going to have to avoid hanging clothing outdoors and avoid eating food at the supermarkets. Grow your own food in little greenhouses if you can to get the nutrition your body needs. And look up stuff that has a lot of nutrition and start focusing in on that. And outside of that, you got to get educated, and that's all you can do, but it's enough. And it will make a big difference for you and your friends, your family, and everybody around you. And it's worth it, I think.
Don't wait to be asked to come back. Do you hear me? Anytime you want to come on this program. Just get in touch. Name the day, and we'll bring you on.
I will. Okay, I'll do that for you. Thank you, my friend. You're awesome.
No, not at all, mate. Look after yourself in British Columbia there, and continued strength to you, and Godspeed to you. And, you know, I know you've got a lot of enemies, but they've not managed to shut you up thus far. Just keep it going, Dana. And again, I say to our listeners, if we're not supporting guys like this, we can forget about it. It's as simple as that. Dana, thanks for coming back
on. Great point. Thank you, my friend. Hugs for you and your family and your friends, your loved ones, and everybody out there.
You too, buddy. Bye for now. The amazing Dana Durnford on the line to us there from British Columbia. The website is thenuclearproctologist.org. Go and support him there. I don't know how you fought. What do you say about that? That email from Albert. You know, it's the sort of thing I think of, and I feel stupid. There's no barriers. The Atlantic isn't protected from the Pacific, or vice versa. No, it isn't. It's an extinction event. I mean, it's unbelievable. 1 million gallons of water plus a day still pouring into the Pacific Ocean from the reactors. Because they're using millions of gallons, they're pouring millions of gallons onto it, as he described there. And isn't it incredible, with all of that knowledge, there are still people, very powerful people, in this country here in the UK, who are advocating for the building of more nuclear power plants. And giving... Now, if I'm wrong here, I apologise. I'm saying this on the fly here. But didn't I read somewhere that they were even putting it out to tender, and the same Japanese who ballsed up Fukushima could bid for the rights to run a power plant here, a nuclear power plant? These people are insane. They're insane. And those who question why these things happen and connect the dots and link events like Fukushima with other events, they're called insane. Not the people who are pouring millions of gallons of water a week, radiated water, into the Pacific Ocean. They're not insane at all. But the researchers questioning this, connecting the dots, explaining what's going on, they're the nut jobs, right? That's it for the programme. Big thanks to Alison Shablow for coming on, and for Dana Durnford as well. Really, really important discussions, I think, on the programme today. Julie Kelly joins us tomorrow. She's among the guests, the journalist and chef, to talk about genetically engineered foods. Big thanks to Simon Stewart for looking after the YouTube channel, to Aaron for his help with the website as well. Do stay in touch with davidicke.com/headlines. David is in Zagreb this coming Saturday. To find out more about that, go to theworldwidewakeup.com. Alternate Current Radio and Fab Radio 2 have got a host of brilliant programmes coming up right now, straight after me. Until tomorrow at 7 p.m. BST, British Summertime, you look after yourselves and one another. And thanks for supporting this programme. I really appreciate it. Alrighty, see you tomorrow then. Leaving you with the Smashing Pumpkins. Bye for now.